morning. It's great to be here. This will be an update from what I talked about a couple months ago at Program Managers Meeting. And after Program Managers Meeting, Laurel stopped me and said, you know, they finally gave you enough time on the agenda. And I kind of, and that's what she said, and Laurel's one of the kindest persons in the known universe. And so what I heard is that I talked too damn long. And so, and so this is going to be pretty brief, but it's going to be an update of what we talked about. And then we're looking, I'm sorry, Laurel.
That's not what I'm doing.
But anyway, so what I'd like to do is update the funding, and things have changed a little bit from Program Managers Meeting, but not a lot, but I do want to kind of call that out. And then in questions and answers, there's a lot of things to talk about. Immunization is very hot right now, as you all know, and you're working so hard on it. So I'd like to go over just our overall funding status. So shown here, and a number of similar slides, we've got FY 6, 7, 8, 9, and then what I presented in January was FY 10 minimum, and FY10 maximum, and I've slipped in a column as of 4/1, so as of the beginning of this month, and so that's kind of the current funding status that we have. And just in terms of graphically, you can see that with the addition, and this is Immunization Program Operations Fund, so what, you know, obviously what Melissa was just talking about, and you can see a couple of important things in here. One is the ERA funding is up here, and the ERA funding has been static. And I have a table of this next time, and you'll all be able to get slides so you can take a look at the actual numbers. But the one thing that, do we have a laser pointer? We don't have a laser pointer. The one thing that Melissa mentioned in terms of the carryover funding, you can really see quite graphically in here, red is carryover, and in FY09, in FY08 was the first year that we did not award carryover from the previous fiscal year. We held that carryover, and that's why it was a very small amount, and we awarded that for the next fiscal year.
Great.
I can use the mouse. Okay. All right. Okay. So FY08 was the year that no carryover was awarded that year, and so you can see a small amount in carryover in here. And then, and the carryover from that fiscal year was not awarded in that fiscal year, but instead, the carryover from this fiscal year was awarded in this fiscal year, and so you can see carryover back up to where it was before. But the whole point of this, of awarding two-year-old carryover money, is that it could be awarded earlier in the fiscal year and give you guys plenty of time to plan for the use of those funds. And indeed, and so this is a carryover reduction strategy in here, and indeed, there's less carryover being awarded this year than there was last year. Now, one question, it's kind of a good question, was, is there less carryover because you had more time to plan to spend the money, or is there more carryover, or, you know, less carryover because there was really, this was a lean grant year and there was less money carried over? And so we don't know the answer to the question. I think in the long run, though, we can expect this carryover to be a smaller amount. And I know it became a real point of confusion this year, in terms of, well, the 317 operations funding went down, and the place where it went down primarily was in less carryover funding that was available. And so you can kind of see that. The overall funding amount was in pretty good shape. And if we take a look at this in a table, this is exactly the same information. So FY 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 minimum as of April 1st, and then 10 maximum. And so in terms of the new dollars in here, we were saying that it would probably be at least $276.7 million in terms of new funding, total funding. And it looks like it's, and up to 280.4, so it looks like we hit the maximum on the new funding, $280.4 million. Carryover, again, this is two-year-old carryover coming back, and so it did not change in here, and we were looking at Pan flu money being somewhere between 14 and 15.7, and it's around a little closer to 14, $14.5 million. And then the ERA funds, of course, has been static. And so for our total funding, what we were looking at for operations was $378.4 million to $383.8 million. And so it was a little bit closer to the $383.8 million. So So, you know, not bad. I think that the carryover was a bit of a challenge going from 19 to 8.1, and I think that that created a lot of confusion and difficulty. But the general trajectory of the program has been to go up, and the big unknown question is what happens when the ERA funding goes away this year. If we take a look at the VFC non-vaccine funding, so the operations funding of VFC, that was included in the previous table, you can see that there's not a whole lot of changes in here in terms of basic operations, up a tiny bit between 10 and 9. Ordering, not too much of a difference. There's a little bit of money for distribution for Alaska and the Pacific Island grantees, because they do the distribution themselves, and so there has to be some support for that. And then the AFIX amount has been pretty much static, a little bit of an increase in here, DA personnel. And for the first time, we started to have a little carryover in BFC, but it's sort of a definitional thing. It used to be that we'd say if there was carryover, it was always in 317, and now we're able to put it into different categories. But it's really a very tiny amount and not very easy to see. And that information is in a table in here, so you can take a look at that. Between, and I didn't put the column in between like I probably should have, but in terms of what was said at program managers meeting, there's very little difference in here. I think comparing these, yeah, the DE personnel was adjusted a little bit, a small amount, $100,000, but not really very much difference in here. So going from $76.8 million to $76.7 million. Let's take a look at vaccine. So we've got VFC in the black bars, 317 in the blue, and then ERA vaccine funding in the red in here. And you can see that, you know, VFC continues its march upwards in here. You can see that 317 continues at about the same level in here, and then we have these amounts of ERA funds that are on top of that. And if we see that, oops. I'm sorry, and I that was a slide straight from the program managers meeting. This is the one where we've got the difference as of 4/1/10. The same thing, you can see that we're just about the same in here. No changes in VFC, although that may change. I'll talk about that in a second. 317, and then the ERA funds we adjusted because there was a little bit. Because we know the amount that was actually spent in 09 before it was an estimate of what was spent in 09. And then if you take a look at this in a table, I put an asterisk or a couple of asterisks over here for VFC funding, $3.285 billion in VFC funding, and I'll get to this line in a second. But the double asterisk, the reason for that is that there's been, as you know, the supplemental dose of pneumococcal conjugate 13 valent has been recommended, and so we're working hard to make an estimate of what it will take in terms of the amount of doses of vaccine to provide that supplemental dose for the VFC-eligible children. And so we're going to convert that into a request to the Office of Management and Budget, and currently our estimate is somewhere or close to a little bit over $200 million. And so at the end of the fiscal year, if we're able to get sufficient evidence for OMB that there'll be additional need this year, this line, this number here will go up, and that's why I put a double asterisk. So we're requesting that for this fiscal year. Section 317 vaccine, going back to 06, 225, 244, 255, 256, 254. And as of 4/10, it went down a little bit, and that was due to a CDC-wide TAP or rescission or indirect cost that was applied to every program at CDC. We had a choice. It could be taken from operations or from vaccine, and you chose to take it from vaccine, knowing that I think everybody is very strapped for operations funds. And last year, there was about $38 million of 317 vaccine that was not used to order vaccines, and that was rolled into your funding this year for vaccine. And so we took all of that. It was about $5.8 million dollars, and it was taken from Section 317 vaccine. That happened between program managers meeting and now. My understanding is that that's the last that will happen, but it was immunization was not singled out. It was done across the board over here. ERA, now we know the split between 09 and 10, and I'll talk a little bit more about ERA later. But in terms of the general trajectory of the program on vaccines from 06, 1.9 billion, 2.66 billion, a big increase in here. Of course, this is from primarily the adolescent vaccines, 2.689 up to 3.2. And now it looks like we'll be looking at about $3.65 billion. So a lot of vaccine funding out there. These are the three observations that I made at the program managers meeting, and I still think that these are true observations, that we have an unprecedented level of resources in both vaccine and operations. The current resources that we have are only partway to the Section 317 report, the professional judgment of what we think this program really needs and really could use. And of course, using one-time funding, always a challenge, and I think the ERA funding is a challenge. I'd like to turn to that momentarily. So ERA, making the most of the ERA funding is very, very important, and I know you guys are working very, very hard to do that, and you're also working, in my opinion, very, very successfully to do that. There are challenges with it. It's one-time funding, what will happen at the end of it, the H1N1 opportunity cost, when you guys were all working incredibly hard on H1N1, it makes it very difficult to go on the offense with a non-influenza vaccine. But not using this funding really weakens the argument in the professional judgment that we have basically an underfunded program in Section 317. So we have, we talked at the last time we were together about sort of the principles of how to make sure that the funding is really used optimally. And I wanted to make the point that by working together, we'll be able to make this happen. And I think that A, we are working together on it, and B, we are absolutely going to make this happen. We take a look at the ERA vaccine funding status right now. I probably should have asked the spreadsheet to put in commas in here. It's kind of hard to see, but this is $168 million. That's how much the ERA vaccine for the two fiscal years was. Shown over here in the black is how much vaccine has been ordered to date. That's FY9 and FY10. So these are the orders to date, slightly south of $80 million or a little bit less than half of it. However, here is the FY10 influenza pre-book. It was around a little bit over $27 million. And so you all are going on using the ERA funds to go this year on the offense against influenza, which is terrific. Some stuff that everybody's been talking about and everybody's been interested in. And as you know, we treat the pre-book, and once we can make sure that the vaccine manufacturers will be able to come through with those doses, and the number of doses is well less than what we can buy on the federal contract, so we're absolutely confident that we'll be able to get those doses of vaccine for you, then this counts as doses in our accountability measure for ERA. So everything that's why I kind of shaded it gray in here, is that this is what's been done to date. Even though there's more work to do on here, we're buying the vaccine with the ERA dollars, and you'll have that vaccine in the depot ready for you to use. For April, here's how much has been programmed to be spent during the month of April. I don't know how much of that has been realized. Here's how much has been programmed to be spent between May, June, July, and August. And there's a little bit of unprogrammed funding that's left. And so the big thing is to make sure that when you work with your project officer, that every dollar of your ERA funds is programmed. What we will do is we're going to work with you to make sure that if you program those funds, the way that the fund sources get assigned, those funds will be used. And so the key thing is to program the funds, and we'll be able to get this balance down to zero before the end of the fiscal year, or very, 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 very close to zero, so that the rounding error becomes the size of a dose of vaccine rather than in the millions of dollars. And so it's going well. I'm very confident that it's going to go the rest of the way. We just, if you have a little bit of funding that's yet to be programmed, and I think that in here there's a few million dollars, and a couple of them, the VOFAs just hadn't been updated, so this is even smaller than it really looks. So I know we can, I know that we can get this done. So looking ahead, I mentioned this at the last meeting. The legislative proposal, though, was not in the health care reform law. So the VFC legislative proposal that would have allowed VFC vaccine for underinsured children in health department clinics was not part of the law that was passed. It was in the House version, not the Senate version, not in the final reconciled version. So delegation of authority remains in the gray area. That was probably the best opportunity for that VFC legislative proposal to really make it into law. And so now it seems very unlikely that the legislative proposal is ever going to become law. And that really raises the importance of finding a way out of the gray area for the delegation of authority that we're in right now. The current status is unchanged. We know that it's occurring. We are honoring your delegations of authority that are going on. In other words, we're allowing VOFA to be updated to accommodate underinsured children and your VFC providers to whom you've delegated authority. And we're not right now providing any guidance on it because we consider these are local arrangements between FQHCs and the clinics to whom they're delegating their authority to extend their reach. There's an HHS working group. Kristen Pope and I are on the CDC side of things, and so we're going to get this working group back together so that we can provide guidance on delegation of authority. And then if you look forward to the healthcare reform law, there's going to be a lot of, you know, sort of the details are going to be in the implementation of this law, but in, you know, according to the law and, you know, certainly eventually by 2014, the degree of underinsurance should go down because there'll be a required essential benefits package, and the degree of, you know, and uninsurance should also go down, those who don't have any insurance. But importantly for this group, underinsurance should go down, so the need to delegate authority should be much less. And so we'll be working with you. I'll keep you informed in here, but we want to get to the point that we can provide some guidance so that we can get out of this gray area in VFC implementation. There, I had to put the word potential on here. It's very frustrating. We were, the Era High Tech Award was supposed to be out and posted by now. It's not out and posted yet. It should be out and posted very soon. There's a hang up well above us in something that I'm pretty sure will get resolved, and this is that approximately $25 million to help with the interoperability between electronic health records, electronic medical records, and registries. And I think Cindy Weinbaum has talked with you all on several of the AIM calls about trying to get funding for school-located influenza vaccination. There's strong support for that, both at the CDC level and also at the department level. It's not been approved at the OMB level, and there's a fairly short fuse because we need to know that in order to buy additional doses of influenza on the vaccine contracts, and so that's something that'll have to be resolved fairly soon. If it does come through, what we're looking at is a two-year period of funding that's got substantial operations and substantial vaccine money. There's a possibility of having an adult funding opportunity announcement this fiscal year and another one next fiscal year. This is related to health care reform law. It's not clear whether that's going to come through, but these are things that we're working very hard on, and there's potential for some other ones as well. But the problem is it's all potential, and the time is running short, and so we're not sure what will be able to come out this fiscal year. We're very hopeful on the Era High Tech. It's supposed to be out. And we're pretty hopeful on the school-associated vaccination, but we can't make an announcement until it gets approved, and it's not approved yet. So that's it. It's a brief update, very brief update. And you know, Melissa and I are happy to take questions.
I don't think I have any questions, but I wanted to make two comments just to be clear that September 1 or October, September 30th or October 1 deadline is for vaccine only, that grantees do have through calendar year 2011 for the ERA vaccine, ERA operations funding, and that when Lance shows funding for AFIX, that is what we in the branch refer to as VFC AFIX. It's for those visits, whether they are separate or combined. The VFC AFIX funding is for VFC and or VFC AFIX visits.
Thanks, you guys. That was a very nice overview. I'm curious about the 317 vaccine reduction, the 5 million reduction between last year and this year. And is that a one-time or ongoing cut?
Yeah. My sense is it's a one-time reduction. I think that there's been a substantial reorganization or a reorganization, as the case may be, and all the programs had a bit of a reduction in here.
Okay. I have a second question on the ERA vaccine. There was an email query about asking if there were states who could use more of it, and we haven't heard back yet. And is that sort of, I'm guessing that that's probably related to the challenges we've had with reporting and everybody feeling like the reports reflect what they're doing?
Well, there are a couple of things. One is that what we're looking at now in terms of going through what's been programmed through April is that almost all the funding has been programmed through April, but not all of the funding. And so at the end of this month, we'll be able to take a look, and that's where there'll be some conversations. If a grantee is saying, I really can't use those funds, then we will seek out places that would like to use the funding. And so we're looking at May, June, July to try to move the funding around. It's going pretty well though, and so I was like sweating bullets. I thought we were going to be really, I really was worried about it. I mean, I'm still worried about it, but I'm not panicked about it anymore. And I think that you guys are just doing a fabulous job. And if you get it programmed, we're going to try to do our best to honor the programming that you have as we do the fund source assignment to make sure that it gets used. And so there's probably not going to be a lot of ERA funds that can be moved around. I'm hoping that that's the case. It'll certainly be a lot easier if that's true, if everybody can kind of get it tucked away and programmed. I think it's a conversation that we may want to have about 317 funding, though. If there are states that say, we've got a whole bunch of 317 funding, we're not going to be able to use it. Every year we have had the ability to move money around, and certainly 2 years ago we moved a fair amount of money around. Last year we moved a little bit of money around. But it's never moved without sort of, are you going to really use the funding? No, we're not. All right, then we'll give up. And so I think that there's a possibility of having some 317 funds move probably, between in this summer, between May and, May and August.
Great. Thank you.
Okay. And congratulations.
Hi, Lance. First of all, I want to just thank you for going to bat for us for the funding all the time and trying to get it right and moving forward. But I know we had a long conversation a few weeks ago about 317 funds, ops, and is it possible we could go back to that slide? Because I think it finally hit home for me a little bit on where I'm feeling the reduction in Michigan so much. Yeah. And so I felt it was kind of important maybe for me to talk about it in front of everybody, because
do you want
on this slide, this one's perfect, because where we're seeing a good amount of money, where the fiscal year 09 was 312, and then as of 4-1, we're at 382, but if you take out the $80 million of ERA, it's actually less than what we had. And for states like Michigan, we kind of tried to really take ERA serious and put out there an improvement to program, not ongoing activities, but improvements. And we obligated that money out primarily to local health departments that we don't want to have to pull back. And so what we end up with is a shortfall, quite a large shortfall in our 317, because because truly that base amount did get cut. Mm-hmm. And so I don't know. I see that it looks good on paper that we had an increase, but the reality is we felt a decrease in Michigan.
Well, your points are well taken. You're right. And one of the things that I should have mentioned here was one of the points that when we were having our conversation a few weeks ago about this is that you know there is a big difference in here, 19.1 to 8.1, and ideally we'd like to get that 8.1 down to zero because it represents a not good mark on the program as carryover. On the other hand, we have been calling it, you know, part of your award, but not sort of calling it out as sort of an extra part of the award that everybody, you know, because carryover gets awarded in lieu of new funds, and so basically that essentially gathers up whatever carryover is, uses a formula to give it to all the grantees. So one of the things that we're talking about doing in the future is to at least distinguish what it is that's carryover so that you know that you can't really count on it year after year after year, and in fact you should count on it and hope that it eventually goes, you know, it's a hard thing to hope that money goes away, but it goes away, and that what you're really looking at is the new funding that we're trying to keep as a regular, reliable amount that ideally will increase over the years because this is an underfunded program. I think the other key thing is just, you know, what is going to happen here? You know, are we going to have a fall off the cliff? And I know there's a lot of people trying to work to make that not happen, but I think it's that the one thing that I came up with and that Nancy and I have been talking about that to come up in the conversation that you and I had a few weeks ago is just to at least call out the carryover so that you know that it's something that's not really part of the base award of the grant.
I think that'd be useful, and I when I look at these numbers, it does make me very nervous, though, for next year, I guess. But thank
and that's why, you know, it's one thing to say, you know, this is one-time funding, but you know, one-time funding really is hard. I mean, it really is different, and states have had a different approach. And my understanding from Michigan, what you guys did is that, as you said, you awarded it to local health departments to kind of keep them going,
right.
What will happen next year. So, good.
Thank you.
Hi, my name is Sherilyn Kraft. I'm from Virginia. My concern is actually with the fact that the VFC funds were not specifically in the new health care reform. And my concern is in 2014, if the policy isn't driven in a way where it will allow those people that are driven to their medical homes to be able to utilize the public vaccination services that many of them use on a continuing basis, if we don't have a mechanism to be able to bill back to these insurance plans that they're obligated to, because we have no control over the rules for that, we are going to widen the gap of unvaccinated people because there's not enough medical homes. And we have this political discussion and this medical discussion that intersects on a regular basis. And quite frankly, I'm worried about the children. And I don't know what, I haven't read any safety net to be able to take care of those people that are caught in the mid-gap, because we don't have the administrative robustness to be able to, currently, to be able to build to these infrastructures.
I think you are pointing out a fundamental concern, and just to kind of try to expand a little bit, I thought you said it very, very well. I think to try to expand on that a little bit, when you think about VFC under healthcare reform, we don't know what will be the size of VFC. It may get a little bit bigger if Medicaid is supposed to expand, but the expansion points of Medicaid aren't necessarily children. You know, it may be easier to enroll some children in the program. So Medicaid may go up a little bit. Uninsured is hopefully going to go down. Underinsured is hopefully going to go down. But the health departments are going to be in a difficult position. And I couldn't have said it better, if you can't bill for the services that you do. And so I remember at the program managers meeting where I did get to talk about one of my favorite subjects at great length, and it was Lorraine Duncan's effort for the billables project. I think that's a really fundamental thing for all programs to be taking a look at, because you have, you know, many, many, many dollars of vaccine that are potentially being given away to fully insured children with all the attendant operations funding that really requires to steer that, where there's not an administration fee that's billed for that. And so these billable projects, there's 14 now. In the slide that I had here where it said others, one of the others in terms of funding is that the Office of Management and Budget and the President's budget for FY11 put aside, I think it's around $4.5 million for expanding the billables project. And so what I would urge everybody to do is to take a look at this, to think about doing strategic planning to make it possible to get paid for the services that you provide for fully insured children. So I really appreciate that comment, because it's a real fundamental change in the program, and healthcare reform law has that potential to really fundamentally hit the health department clinics. And so in order to keep things going and to tap into this potential other revenue stream to keep things going, I think it's very important to think through the billables project and take it seriously. We'd like to keep this going and expand it to get all of the grantees. Dan, great to see you.
I have a pretty fundamental question, so I apologize if I'm the only one that doesn't know the answer. But we just did our spreadsheets for round two, and my question is, will we get that amount? And the follow-up question is, can we expect a round three?
The answer to the question is, yes, you will get that amount. It has not been changed from when you filled out your spreadsheet. And in regards to round three, there will be a very, very limited amount of funding available in round three. It will only go to a few grantees, so I would not count on it.
Good morning. What in your grid, we had some...
Operations or vaccine?
Operations. We had some numbers that we can expect probably in the future. The one you didn't really talk much about, I don't think, unless I was looking for my coffee, was PanFlu. Now, what's the status of that money? Is that here to stay for a while longer, or have we decided we don't get pandemics in this country?
Well, I think that would be a hard position to take, that we don't see them. But what we don't know is we really don't know the future of the pandemic funding. We haven't heard that it would be getting withdrawn, and certainly it got supported this year and looking forward. Now, it may very well be that influenza funding comes from a different source than the PanFlu funding. There may be a more direct line. Certainly the school-associated influenza vaccination funding, that's a different source of funds. But for use for influenza, there's a lot of interest in kind of capitalizing on all the work that you did to expand your infrastructures in here. So my sense is that the influenza line should grow and should get bigger, hopefully substantially bigger. But whether it comes from PanFlu or not, I don't know. I think we may end up starting to call that an influenza line. We'll see, but it did, and then the one thing you said is that, certainly there will be pandemics. The other is that I think that you were successful as programs in making the argument that having the skills and ability and experience to handle influenza as a routine vaccination will help in a pandemic. I mean, clearly all the state work and local health department work that was done for the pandemic, a lot of that was based on the work that you have been doing in the last, back to, 7, 8, 9 years of learning how to deal with flu in a public health driven and guided program, and it made a huge difference for the pandemic. So I think that part of the argument has sunk in very well, and you heard Ann say that, and I believe you heard the secretary say that too. I think she made that point as well, and I think it's due to the work that you guys do.
And this is maybe a very goofy question. One of, and it just dawned on me, around billables, for example. When we put out a pot of money and say, create some really good, a good project, a good program, a good answer around the issue of billables, and Oregon came up with some really good plans. Then more money comes out and you say to more states, go build a plan. When do we get to Or can we get to a point where instead of saying, okay, now build 50 or 64, when can we take a really good one and just push it up and make it national? I mean, is that goofy or is that just goofy?
Wait, no, where's the non-goofy choice? Because I don't think it's goofy at all. I mean, one of the problems, though, is that so much of things are done at the state level. Now, in the era of healthcare reform, though, I think that that really provides, you know, with insurance reform, it really has the potential to make this a little bit more uniform state by state. Now, for example, those who are doing billables projects, you know, you have to deal separately perhaps with the ERISA plans than the non-ERISA plans. So tomorrow, Sarah Rosenbaum is going to talk, and one of the things that she's going to mention is that they're doing a study to take a look at the potential impact on immunizations, and one of the key questions is, will ERISA plans be required to provide immunization coverage? It looks like the answer is probably going to be yes, because it's a federal law, and ERISA is a federal, probably, yeah, which would be wonderful. I mean, it needs to happen, and it's looking like it may actually do that. What that really means then is if underinsurance is supposed to go away and there's not this ERISA plan problem, then it kind of weakens the argument that an insurance plan shouldn't step to the plate to pay because they're supposed to be covering these services. And so I think that it'll help. I think there's still going to be a lot of local differences and state differences, but I think your idea of having a model that kind of comes to the top, or two or three different models that really seem to work well, that's something that we're really, really hoping for, and that's why we're excited about having 14 to start with, and we'd like to see an expansion, and if it goes well, then the last half of the states that are coming on to sort of a billables project, the way should be paved a little bit more, should have different pathways. So I think your point's a very, very good one, and I think the healthcare reform law is going to help us. Lewis, down the hall from me, Lewis.
Yeah, well, you can sit down, Lance. This is for Melissa.
Okay. You even sit closer to her, but that's okay.
That's right.
Melissa, regarding the prior approval for contracts, we get inquiries, most often in the issue of county contracts, that grantees have funds that they just want to add to existing contracts that don't change the scope of the work or the period of performance. Is that still considered a change?
That's a great question. And no, it's not considered a change. It's just adding to the contract. That does not require prior approval. Thank you for pointing that out.
Hi, I've got several, but they're all short. So the school-associated funding, the funding for school-based clinics for flu vaccine. Can't seem to get that out of my mouth correctly, but at any rate, I know you can't talk a lot about that yet, but do you have any hopeful conjecture of when we might know about that? Because I, for one, have a school system chomping at the bit to really build upon last year's efforts, and I'd love to know if I might even have an opportunity to help them.
Yeah, we know that we have to know soon, and the reason we have to know soon, and HHS and OMB know that we need to know soon because they're, in terms of the federal contracts for influenza, Jeannie did a really wonderful job negotiating an upper limit of how many doses that can be purchased, and the upper limit for pediatric doses was 30 million doses, and that's almost double what was able to be purchased the year before. So there's a lot of potential to buy vaccine, influenza vaccine, but there's a deadline after which we kind of lose that right of first refusal, and that deadline is coming up in May, and so we're going to have to know probably within the first half of May whether this will come through in order to give access to those doses of vaccine and before they sort of disappear. And so that's, you know, so it's going to have to be done soon. We were really hoping that it would have been done about 2 weeks ago, and it hasn't been done. I don't know all the reasons, but I think that there are some, you know, there's just a lot of challenges right now in the federal budget, you know, kind of looking at supporting healthcare reform and everything. And so it's not, you know, it's You know, there's not, you know, it just, we're where we are right now, but we're working very hard because I think that everybody, and you heard the secretary talk about this and certainly Ann talk about this, is to really kind of take advantage and capitalize on what you guys have done to try to keep things going.
Well, I'm all for it, and that's great, and I know there's only so much you all can do, and you're as anxious to get it out as we are to know about it. I guess the thing for us to do is go ahead and plan, knowing that we might have a very short turnaround time. On the potential additional money for billables kinds of activities, again, trying to plan ahead for sort of an unknown, would it be reasonable, if you're not one of the 14 states that got money last year, to kind of look at what the criteria were and for the folks that got funding this year to kind of think about strategic planning for, again, if money drops in a hurry?
Yeah, it was, so two things. One is that for FY11, I think that there's a extremely high likelihood that we'll have that and be able to come out with a FOA. There's a possibility there's a possibility of FY10 funding, and then it would be really quick. And then Melissa just passed me a note that says two minutes. I thought I said 2 months.
No.
I thought she was giving the answer to your question that you have 2 months to figure it out.
It was probably something to me to quit asking questions.
But what she's telling me is that we have 2 months for this session, so we'll just keep going.
Okay.
Everybody's got your overnight bags and all that. No, so I think she's telling me we're about out of time. But FY11, I think that you should, it'd be great to think strongly about this.
Okay.
And FY10 is a possibility.
Okay, great. A couple of...
And also, there weren't criteria. We were looking for anybody that was really interested in doing it, so it wasn't like you had to have a certain characteristic of your state or anything like that.
That's true. I'd forgotten that. Okay, the first thing, I would come up there and kiss your feet for saying that the FISCA table is going to be gone. I had told multiple people that I would have given my firstborn child to make all those cells turn green last year, you know. So that is great. I'm still not sure that I quite understand what you were saying about how the funding process will actually be written this year, but I guess I will wait to see that. And actually, I guess that was the biggest question, and I can't read my last note, so I'll move and let Nancy say what she needs to say. Thank you.
Okay. All right, thank you.
I just wanted to give you a heads up that regarding the school-located vaccine clinic funding for this year, the next thing you'll see, and I hope you'll see it next week, is a really short, I think, 5-question SurveyMonkey survey asking if money became available to you in August and not until August, would you be able to implement a school-based influenza campaign this fall? About how many doses do you think you'd need? How would those split out between LAIV and TIV? There might be one other question, but we're trying to get a sense of, given the late availability of that money, could you, and this funding is going to be split between operations. There will be operations funding and vaccine. So taking into account that there would be operations support too, you're going to see that question, and that will help us move ahead.
You know, we're all part of the 317 coalition and going in asking for more money, and it's often received because of the value that Congress sees in this. Is there any issue, I mean, I wouldn't want to sit in your shoes for anything, but thinking about even dealing with a rescission that you have no choice on, I guess, and it would have had to have been either in ops or vaccine, but is there any issue involved in the fact that Congress keeps saying, hey, we're giving you more money for 317 vaccine, and yet we have chosen to make a cut there?
That's a very good question. We generally, in the last several years, Congress has been more silent about how much is operations and how much is vaccine. Office of Management and Budget weighed in on this in the President's budget, but usually it goes by what, you know, Congress says, because they're the funder for the program. It happened very quickly, and that's why I wanted to put it up there to really call it out, is that there had to be a decision that was made between vaccine and operations, and kind of looked at the amount of unspent vaccine funding versus the amount of carryover operations funding, and I keep hearing a pretty consistent message that almost everybody is starving for operations funding, and thought that given the short period of time that we just needed to make a decision, and that was a decision that was made, I think, in the future if we get more time to do this. And certainly when we've gotten increases, these are things that we'd like to consult with you about, which is better, to have a little bit more vaccine or a little bit more operations if we get an increase. Like I say, immunizations is hot, this program is hot, and I think that, you know, there's a very good chance that we're going to continue to get increases, and then we'll look to get to get consultation about what will be the most helpful for the programs. But this happened very quickly. Yes, yeah, VFC was, VFC's off limits because of the its particular mandatory funding nature. But I mean, all of the, the VFC is the only entitlement program at CDC. It's also a big, big program. And so in a way it was, it's always nice to know that that's off limit and sort of as a big ballast for your program. I mean, it didn't get tapped. The equivalent tap would have been, you know, just a huge amount of money. So, but yeah, that was it. That's what it was, right.
Thank you very much.
Okay, thank you.